Today's focus program is for the readers among you and those of you who would like to get back to reading. That's reading books, whole, complete books. A new federal survey says a slim majority of Americans still read books voluntarily, and reading levels are higher among folks in their mid-60s to mid-70s. I'm Jim Meadows, and we'll take a closer look at that survey and a close look at what's good to read this fall. I'll be talking with independent bookseller Mary Beth Nabel from Peoria Heights and Kelly Strom from the Champaign Public Library, and let's hear what you're reading these days, by yourself, in a book club, or wherever. Some fall reading suggestions today on Focus. Our program continues after the news. Well, welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and today's show is for people who love books. And it features people who love books, but especially it features the books. We'll be talking a little about the book business and the latest on reading habits, but especially what's new and interesting to read these days. With me today in the studio is Kelly Strom, Collections Manager at the Champaign Public Library. Welcome back, Kelly.
Thank you for having me.
And Mary Beth Nabel, who runs I Know You Like a Book, an independent bookstore in Peoria Heights. Mary Beth, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And feel free to join us. Have you read something recently that affected you so much you have to tell all your friends about it? Do you belong to a book club, and what is your group reading now? Our toll-free number is 1-800-222-9455, and that's 1-800-222-WYLL, or email us at will-talk.illinois.edu. Mary Beth, you know, I was just looking up things on the internet. In 2006, there was a documentary that came out bemoaning the decline of the independent bookstore, and that's the year that you opened your independent bookstore.
Well, I tend to go against the tide, I guess.
I was wondering, you know, I used to live in Peoria, and I remember in the 90s there was an independent bookstore in downtown Peoria Heights, where I Know You Like a Book is located. It was a very nice store. It lasted a few years, and then it went away. How are you keeping your story going as an independent business at a time when a lot of people say bookstores are in decline?
Well, I think I have a little bit of a different marketing mix. My store sells both new books and used books. And about a year and a half after I opened the store, I put in a wine bar. And I've also increased the type of sideline items. So that sort of mix helps to sustain the bookselling business.
A wine bar might just work well by itself in a lot of locations. But I'm wondering, do wine bar patrons stick around to browse the books, or is it the other way around?
Actually, I got the idea from one of my customers who would come in nearly every Friday, buy a book, and say, you know, I'm going to go to one of the bars in the Heights and have a glass of wine and read my book. And I thought, well, if I could open one here, perhaps they would stay longer. And yes, people come in, have a glass of wine, browse the books. Book clubs love it, too. And so it's worked out well.
I know that a lot of public libraries, including the Champaign Public Library, Kelly, not wine, but little coffee shops and places to drink coffee there. How does that affect the patronage of a library, do you think?
Well, hopefully it brings people in and makes them feel comfortable here to be able to sit down and read a book and have a cup of coffee or a latte to enjoy while they're relaxing and taking in everything that the library has to offer.
Okay. Want to remind people of the phone numbers to contact us if you have something to say about a book that excited you recently or questions for our guests. Our toll-free number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. And you can email us at will-talk.illinois.edu, or you can contact me on Facebook or Twitter at Focus 580. Mary Beth, I understand you like to showcase local authors, authors with roots or who write about downstate Illinois.
Yes, we do. nearly since the inception of the store, we established what we call our local author series. And so many people now, because of the self-publishing, have books out there and don't have a lot of means to get them out into the public. So what we do is when a local author comes in and says, I've just done this book, we start it off with a book signing. And we do at least one per month, usually two per month.
Okay. Can you tell me some of the local authors who have been doing well that you're fond of?
Oh, there's so many. Now, I must distinguish, our local author series is meant for anyone who has a tie to Central Illinois. Some of the authors are published by big publishing houses. Some of them, as I said, are self-published, but we treat them all the same and give them the opportunity to showcase their books. I've pooled a number of some here that I really, really enjoy, both from children's books as well as history books as well as novels. The last one we just had is a fantastic novel by a gentleman named Ryan Bartlemy. The title of the book is Onward Toward What We're Going Toward.
And okay, that sounds pretty enigmatic.
It's a great debut novel. It is published by IG Publishing, which I believe is out of New York. And Ryan told me right now that his publisher is actually getting it into the European market. So this is going to be an international bestseller. It's just a really well-written fiction about two men that were basically grew up here in Central Illinois who discovered that their father committed suicide, and it's how that affects their lives throughout their years.
These are two men who are not brothers.
They were brothers.
Okay, I see. Two brothers who find out
their dad committed suicide.
Okay,
and the novel then goes on to how that affected their lives.
How does is this could be pretty grim or this could be pretty redemptive? How does this play out, or would you be giving too much away?
It is both. It's there's parts that are extremely humorous and parts that are quite touching. And the other thing that I think people in Central Illinois would love about it is that there's so many descriptive parts where you go, I've been there, I've driven down there. He really captures the spirit.
Okay.
The area.
I'm trying. Not very many writers spend much time in Central Illinois. The one I think of is the late Philip Jose Farmer, which is almost surprising since he was a science fiction writer and spent a lot of time away from this planet. But I know set some of his novels specifically in some version of Central Illinois or Peoria. Have you seen a strong reaction from readers, from patrons towards this book?
We had a really nice signing, and I believe he was also out at the Morton Pumpkin Festival, did a signing out there, so I'm just hoping it really takes off.
Okay. Let me go over to Kelly Strom now over at the library. You brought a pile of books with you. What do you have that you would recommend right now?
Well, I have lots of things to recommend. One that I brought in that I actually am reading right now, because in October I like to read scary books to prepare myself for the Halloween holiday. And so I am reading one right now called Help for the Haunted by John Searles. That's very twisty and a little scary and a lot mysterious.
Can you be more specific?
It is about, it takes place in the 70s and 80s, and it's about two girls who grow up in a family where their parents provide some sort of nebulous service for people who think that they are haunted or have family members who are haunted by demons. And so the parents, the mom prays over them constantly, and the dad claims that he sees different beings, and they don't perform exorcisms per se, but they work with the person trying to figure out a way to ease their mind and calm their lives down after being followed by these beings.
Now, what do you look for in horror fiction, and I don't know exactly what sort of, you know, physical effects. Do you like something that keeps you up at night? Does it raise the hair in the back of your neck? That sort of thing.
You know, my tastes have varied through the years, and I certainly read lots of other things besides horror. But when I do read horror, I like things that basically keep me on the edge of my seat. You know, I want to know, I want to find out about something scary that's happening in a way that they find out about it and solve the problem. So it's different than a mystery or a suspense novel, because there oftentimes is something added to it that adds it to the horror genre, like maybe there's a paranormal occurrence or some sort of supernatural being or just a mysterious, your basic haunting. So, yeah, I like to read something that's got some of those factors in it.
Okay. John Searles, if I'm looking at the correct John Searles, is a editor at large at Cosmopolitan magazine and the author of two other novels, Boys Still Missing and Strange But True. Mary Beth, I'm wondering, over at your store, is there a particular following for horror fiction? And is there anything that's hot right now?
There's always interest in horror fiction. And once again, when we do have our focus on local authors, we have a book that's doing really well by a local author who actually also works at a library here in Central Illinois.
Oh, wow.
Her name is Sylvia Schultz, and the book is called Fractured Spirits, Hauntings at the Peoria State Hospital.
And the Peoria State Hospital, for people who aren't familiar with it, that was an old mental hospital that used to exist in Bartonville, just south of Peoria. I think some of the buildings are still standing, although the hospital itself is long gone.
That's correct. And at the time when it was built, it was actually considered quite progressive in terms of mental health. But then after quite a long period of time, I think it sort of went into decay.
And so it's a good setting for scary stuff to happen, I guess.
Oh, yes.
Well, this is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and we are talking about books for fall. And my guests this morning are Mary Beth Nabel with You Like a Book. No, excuse me. I Know You Like a Book is the correct title, the name of your independent bookstore in Peoria Heights. And Kelly Strom, the collections manager for the Champaign Public Library. And they're sharing some of their book recommendations for the fall. We invite you to do the same. Give a call toll-free at 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL, or send me a question by email at will-talk@illinois.edu, or contact me at Twitter or Facebook at Focus580. We were... Kelly, I know we were looking at a report earlier, and I think I sent you a copy, a big survey that was put out by the National Endowment for the Arts about book reading habits. Apparently, they did an even larger survey about just about all the artistic media that people are consuming these days. But we were focusing on the book part, and There's a lot of numbers here. Mary Beth, did we get this release over to you as well?
I'm sorry, I don't believe I received it.
Okay, so I'm going to talk to Kelly here about it. And one thing I gather is, one thing I saw is that the percentage of people who read for fun, that is, read books that they do not absolutely have to read for school or work, has held about steady over the years. Despite everything, despite the internet, despite short attention spans and extra distractions, is that a surprise for you, or is that something that you can just tell by the library traffic is happening?
No, it's not a surprise. If anything, I'm surprised it's not higher. People still use our public library and our bookstores on a regular basis. Books are just as popular as they ever were, and maybe even more so because the access to them is so much easier right now.
Okay. Were there some things that you thought were a particular interest here? We were talking before the program about what you saw about young people reading.
Yeah, there was a statistic that Americans age 18 to 24 are reading more now than they were in 2008. And I have a theory on this.
The theory?
Yeah. Okay, so this is what I think. I think these are the kids who grew up with Harry Potter. And the whole craziness of Harry Potter and the popularity got them even more and more interested in books. And they kept with that and branched off into other things as they grew older. And now we have a whole new group of kids who are, or kids or young adults, who are reading more than maybe generations before because of this phenomenon. And the other thing that goes along with this is the genre of young adult literature is gigantic right now. Just huge. You go to a bookstore, there's huge areas that are devoted singularly to teen books or young adult books. And I think they're really gunning for that type of population. And as those kids are used to having that available to them, they're going to grow up as readers. If they're good readers as kids, they're going to grow up and be great readers. And the other thing, too, actually, that I wanted to point out is there's a new genre in bookstores now that you see called new adult. And that is specifically for people in their 20s that maybe is a transition between young adult books. I know it seems kind of confusing, but teen books and adult books, there's something new out there called new adult.
That's interesting. Mary Beth, can you fill us in on this? Well, first of all, what are you seeing in terms of just young adult sales in your store?
I agree with everything that's been said. I'm getting a lot more young adults, and what I find fantastic is that once they've gone through the Harry Potter, and then I think they graduate to the Twilight. That was the Twilight series was big. And from there, I see a lot of young adults going towards the classics. And I have a hard time keeping my classics section stocked.
Now, when you say classics, what sort of material are they going for?
Oh, everything from Jane Austen to Faulkner.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really fun. So Hemingway. One of the big things that one of the new novels that's out it's been out for a couple of years, is called The Paris Wife. And it is a novel, but it's based on Ernest Hemingway and his first wife's first year in Paris. And when people read that, especially young adults, I say you should pick up Hemingway's A Movable Feast, which is actually his account of their first year in Paris together. So it makes a nice companion book, and people just love it.
I'd like to note here, speaking of classics, Lee tweeted to us some of the books he likes, and they're all, I think, 20th century classics. East of Eden by John Steinbeck, which I confess I really only know by the James Dean movie, but I think there's more to it in the Steinbeck version. You Can't Go Home Again by Thomas Wolfe. And I think what seems to have been a really influential book for the 20th century, Winesburg, Ohio, that set of stories by Sherwood Anderson, in which the hometown is not Bedford Falls at all. It's more deceptive look at what small town American life is like. And I think there's been a big tradition of that throughout the 20th century anyway in literature. Thank you very much, Lee, for those tweets. And go ahead and contact us on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. The new adult category. Mary Beth, do you have that category as such in your store?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I do have young adults sort of mixed in with my children's section, but I'm not really familiar with the new adult category.
Okay. We are talking about books and new books here at on Focus with Kelly Strom of the Champaign Public Library and Mary Beth Nabel of I Know You Like a Book in Peoria Heights. Kelly, you had a couple of books. You have one of them here about college football. It looks like a couple of big books. Just about the whole field of college football, which we think about a lot here in Champaign-Urbana. Tell me about the one you have with you.
Well, the one I brought, there's two that I kind of put on a list for your listeners, and one of them that I brought in today is called Fourth and Long, The Fight for the Soul of College Football by John U. Bacon, spelled like the food, bacon. And this particular one, the author took a hard look at four programs. There's Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, and Northwestern. So it's of particular interest to some of our Big Ten listeners. And basically, he followed the teams around, went to their practices, followed them to their luncheons, to their classes, talked to administration, just spent time immersing himself in the world of college football, and wrote about his findings. And there's good things in there, as you can imagine, and not so good.
Is this a writer who comes as a football fan, as a lover of the game?
Yes.
But what is it? Can you say in a general sense what he finds disturbing?
Some of the controversies that we've heard about in the news. Talks briefly touches on the sanctions against Ohio State. Of course, the whole Penn State mess. The ideas of the responsibility that's given to these players in winning games and not so much in finding careers for themselves outside of the field.
That's Fourth and Long, The Fight for the Soul of College Football by John U. Bacon. But there's a second book you have about college football as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at the list here, and what you gave us the title is The System, The Glory and Scandal of Big Time College Football. And does that cover similar ground, or does it go in a different direction?
It's similar ground, but it's nationwide instead of just Big Ten. And that's written by some very well-known investigative journalists, Jeff Benedict and Armin Katayan, who I think many of us have seen on ESPN. And, it goes outside the Big Ten and is maybe an even harder look at some of the bad things that are going on in college football, and maybe a way that are looking at the possibility that we need to change this around, that there needs to be some changes made to the NCAA and expectations.
You know, one of the things I've seen discussed in the news media and among commentators more in the last few years is the idea that maybe after all this time of college football being a purely amateur sport, at least in theory, that because of there's so much money going in the game, that the college football players themselves should be paid. Do these books deal with these subjects?
I think the Armin Katayan one, The System, The Glory and Scandal of Big Ten College Football, that one does touch on the economics of it. Not so much, I think, the John Bacon book, but the Jeff Benedict, Armin Katayan one definitely does.
So those are two books. Fourth and Long is the one that really focuses on Big Ten teams,
right. Mm-hmm.
And that's by John U. Bacon. And The System, The Glory and Scandal of Big Time College Football by Benedict and Katayan, looks at college football as a whole. Let me go back to you, Mary Beth, and one of the check-ins on some of the books that you were looking at right now, and again some of those authors with roots or contacts in central Illinois, and one of them I was struck by was one that listeners, I believe, to This American Life weekends on WYLL would have heard of. And that's the late David Rakoff. Am I pronouncing his name right?
Yes, you are.
Good. I ought to if I work at the station that airs that show. But tell me a little bit more about David Rakoff.
Oh, a wonderful, wonderful writer. As you said, he was a contributor for This American Life, and he passed away about a year ago. Before he did, he wrote what I think is just a phenomenal book. It is a novel. And the title of it, it's a long one, it's called Love, Dishonor, Marry, Die, Cherish, Perish. The most unique thing about this novel is that it's written entirely in verse.
In verse.
It's poetry, but it's an actual novel.
After all this time, narrative verse. Is it like Longfellow coming back, or is it a different sort of verse?
Well, it's my high school poetry teacher's going to be mad at me. I think it's called iambic pentameter.
Okay, as in Shakespeare.
Yeah, as in Think the Highwayman.
Okay.
Do you all remember that one?
Here's my blank spot in my high school English classes, but I'm hoping that a lot of folks listening know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it tells a story, but it's just totally rhyming poetry. And the thing of it is, a lot of us don't read poetry that much after we get out of high school or college. And this book is so well done that you're excited to find out what happens next. So it's just, I think it's the sort of book that is a keeper. You don't want to loan it out to anyone. You want to keep it on your shelf. You can go back to it. His language is just beautiful. The descriptions are gorgeous.
That's Love, Dishonor, Marry, Die, Cherish, Perish by the late David Rakoff. And this is a book that's selling now in your store, I take it.
Yes, it is.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break now and come back. Actually, Kelly has another book, which I think contains passages of iambic pentameter. Be interesting to find out about this one. We'll hear more about it in a moment as we continue our discussion of books for fall here on Focus on WILL. This is Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking about books for fall. And my guests today are a bookseller and a librarian. Barry Beth Nabel is with I Know You Like a Book. That's her bookstore in Peoria Heights. Do you have a website or a Facebook page that's best to go to, Mary?
We have both. Probably the Facebook page is more updated, and that would be at You Like a Book, YOULIKEABOOK.
You Like a Book. And Kelly Strom is the collections manager for the Champaign Public Library. I know you folks have a website. Is there a Facebook page for the library, too?
There sure is. You can access that through our website, champaign.org.
Okay. We were talking just a moment ago about David Rakoff's book, Love, Dishonor, Marry, Die, Cherish, Perish, written in iambic pentameter. And Kelly has another recent book written in iambic pentameter. Can you tell me about this one?
Funny the coincidence. This one is called William Shakespeare's Star Wars, and it's by Ian Dosher, and it is the story of Star Wars written in Shakespearean style, iambic pentameter. And I have one part here to read, if you would like.
Please do.
All right. It's about those Star Wars fans out there. It takes place during the time when Luke is living with his aunt and uncle and wants to take off on his own and start his own life, and they need him back at their place to help with the harvest.
So is this like a soliloquy?
No,
okay.
Not this part. So here's his uncle saying, "But harvest time I need thee most. Wilt thou here in the desert yet desert? 'Tis only one more season. This year I shall make enough at harvest time to hire more hands to help than canst thou go next year to the academy. To pilot is a noble trade, my boy, but family is nobler still. I prithee understand. I need thee, Luke."
Now, I did like that little little turn of phrase pairing desert and dessert, uh-huh. But I'm always a little suspicious of these culture mashup books, and there are certainly a bunch of them now with Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, right, and Abraham Lincoln,
right,
Vampire Killer, and a whole lot of ones that I don't know about. Do you think that they work on any level beyond the most simple parody?
Well, they're certainly popular. I can say that. Each of the ones that you've mentioned have been on bestseller lists, have been widely popular with our audience in Champaign as well as on a national level. I don't know that I can speak for the veracity of this Shakespearean take here, but my job is to get things that are popular with the people and make sure that we have them at the library for everyone to experience on their own and make their own decisions. So, yeah, they've been great. People love them.
I'm wondering, Mary Beth, do these books move well at your store?
Yes, they do. And this is interesting here because we were talking about authors from Central Illinois and now Shakespearean readings. I just did a signing with a woman named Lisa Klein. Lisa's father used to be a columnist for the Peoria Journal Star.
Jerry, is that Jerry Klein?
Yes.
And Jerry Klein was the longtime arts columnist, is what he was best known for, I think, for reviewing movies and plays and classical music, et cetera, at the Journal Star. At least that's what I remember reading him. But tell me about Lisa Klein.
Lisa is a former professor of English, and she writes young adult novels, and most of them are based on Shakespearean plays.
Really?
Yes, they're wonderful. Her first one was Ophelia, and she was just at the store doing one called Love Disguised. Her other one is Lady Macbeth's Daughter.
So does she keep her narrative within the world that Shakespeare created, or is she a writer who translates these to a modern setting?
Well, she doesn't really translate them. What she does is she takes the basic story and expands on it further than what Shakespeare wrote. And the thing that I really love about Lisa's writing is that she makes female characters much stronger than Shakespeare ever did.
That's very interesting. So it's still in a world that includes the events of the Shakespeare plays, but maybe she finds out some other things that are going on off stage, as it were.
Yes.
That's very interesting. And in a young adult context, Ophelia, she goes for the younger characters, but actually, except maybe King Lear or something, they're just about all younger characters, and at least someone in there.
Yes. Love Disguised is the first one that's based actually on one of Shakespeare's comedies rather than tragedies.
I'm trying to remember the comedy. I know there's one where a woman dresses up as a man, but I forget which one it is.
That's the one it is, and I can't remember the name of it either.
Okay.
The whole premise is, what if Shakespeare's first muse was also his true love?
Okay.
And so as you see, she kind of expands on that.
Okay. Here's an email we got from Mary, who's writing about a local author from Farmer City and wants us to know about Stacy Coverstone. She is from Farmer City and is actually listed as a best-selling author in several categories on Amazon. She's now based on the East Coast. She specializes in, among other categories, contemporary and historical Western romances. She injects a wry sense of humor into her books. They are always entertaining to read. Her website is Stacy Coverstone. That's Stacy with an E-Y, Coverstone.com. And as Mary writes, Farmer City is very proud of her. So to keep that author on the list, Stacy Coverstone, formerly of Farmer City, and StacyCoverstone.com. I've just been informed by my producer that the Shakespeare play we're trying to remember the name of is Twelfth Night.
Okay.
You know, I wanted to ask both of you just a little bit what the role of e-books is, as far as your own business. Do brick and mortar stores sell e-books? Is that something you do, Mary Beth?
I would have the option to do that through the American Booksellers Association, but I choose not to. One of the reasons is because I'm not that technically proficient. And the other thing, it doesn't really fit with my business model. My business model is this: my store is a destination point. It is a place to come and relax and browse and read real books. In fact, I have a number of customers that have various types of e-readers that come in and buy books because they miss the feel of a book. They miss turning a page. They miss looking at a really neat cover. So, e-books, they are competition for me, but I'm comfortable with my brick-and-mortar store.
That's very interesting. Now, the Champaign Public Library, Kelly, I understand, does provide ebooks now, and I'm wondering how that's working out.
We actually do a lot in electronic media right now. We are part of a large consortium that provides ebooks to people for free, and it's through Overdrive is the name of the company, and our consortium is called My Media Mall. You can get to that through our website, champaign.org, and then click on Downloadables. When you do that, you'll see the option for My Media Mall, which is both ebooks for all different kinds of readers. We don't exclude any readers. And then also downloadable audiobooks to listen to as well, which is equally popular. We also have something called Zinio, which is magazines that you download onto your e-readers, which is fantastic. You could see the cover, you turn, you kind of flip on your screen to turn the pages just as you would a magazine. We have that. We also have preloaded Kindles that we check out at the library. So we have, oh gosh, maybe 24 different Kindles, and they each have a theme. For instance, there's a mystery Kindle that's preloaded with like 50 different mystery titles. So if you're really a mystery lover, you can come and try out a Kindle, try out an ebook. You can check out our mystery Kindle and have all different stories right there for you to read. And then the last thing that we're going to be getting soon is something called Hoopla, which is not only downloadable audiobooks, but it's also movies, TV, and music.
Now, a lot of this, except for the Kindles on loan, really don't involve going to the library as a place. You go to the library's website, and then you download from there. And Mary Beth, I gathered if you were to sell ebooks, that would probably be through your website. Am I correct there?
Yes, I believe so.
So that, I'm just wondering, that does change the experience. Mary Beth, you talked about people with Kindles who come to your store because they miss the experience of books, but I'm wondering if they also miss the experience of going to the bookstore, which is just a little different from looking at a bunch of book covers on a screen and reading a few samples.
Exactly. And in fact, you know, it's the whole discussion, and I'm not talking just about book clubs. I'm talking about customers that come in and start talking to another customer about books that they've read and what they like and recommendations. Book reading is very, very interactive, and I just don't think you get that benefit from an e-reader. I also, to my knowledge to date, you can't get an e-reader signed by an author.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a way that would work, but
don't.
Okay, you know, we just got a tweet in from Grace about how she devoured the Ice and Fire series this summer, and now I'm looking around desperately on my computer screen about the Ice and Fire series. Can either of you tell me anything about it? Or is that the Fire and Ice?
I think it's Fire and Ice.
Ah, here we are. Okay. This is, are either of you familiar with this series?
Is that the George R. R. Martin?
I do not know. Grace, please tweet some more. We're so blind on this one area. I see several things called Fire and Ice, but and there is a Fire and Ice, a 2003 novel in the Warriors series by Aaron Hunter. But after that, my knowledge about this goes. The Warrior series is a children's fantasy series written by Aaron Hunter about warriors of the Thunder Clan, one of four groups of feral cats living in the wilderness. Tell me, Grace, is that the one? No, it's not. My producer thinks we're talking about the George R. R. Martin books.
That's what.
Yep. And how have those books been moving for, especially with the TV series?
Huge. Gigantic huge. Yeah. TV series will always spark more interest, thank goodness, for people wanting to come in and actually read the books or read accompanying books that might explain a topic even further once their interest has been piqued.
Well, now I'm feeling very silly that I couldn't make the original connection to George R. R. Martin. Mary Beth, do the books move well at your store?
Yes, they do. In fact, I think I'm all out. But I do agree with you, Ann Kelly, about the television series. I remember Charlene Harris with the vampire ones. Kelly, are you familiar with those?
Yes, yep.
Yeah, when that was out, I believe on one of the cable stations, we couldn't keep those on the shelves either. Mm-hmm.
That's very, very interesting that it happens. And it happens with writers that I would have thought from would have been considered genre writers that go to smaller, devoted but smaller readerships. That's certainly how I knew the name by reputation of George R. R. Martin mm-hmm. for decades. Mm-hmm. But he's certainly
been around for a while. Yeah, he's definitely been around for a while, but now he's quite popular.
Jeff from Champaign had a comment on Fire and Ice. Good morning, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. I'm reading the fourth volume now, and it's interesting, but you've got to commit for this because each one's 1,000 pages long, and there's a map and all kinds of different characters you follow throughout, and so it's quite complex. You know, it would be similar to medieval kind of stories with some magic in it, very similar to, I can't think of the Hobbit series, you know, that kind of thing.
Lord of the Rings, J.R.R. Tolkien.
Very, very well done, but, you know, it's pretty complex, and you can't get attached to too many characters because they all get killed off, you know.
I was gonna say, it's more violent.
Okay. Don't fall in love with any of the characters too intently, I guess.
Yeah, okay, I just wanted to comment on that. It's well written, but you have to commit. Like I said, each volume is 1,000 pages long, so that tells you something.
Okay, well, Jeff, thank you very much for filling me in. And, you know, that's one thing one thing I've thought of is that there's something so enticing about a series of books because you're walking into a whole world. After a while, you get to know that world. You must, Mary Beth, you must see customers coming in who are really in love with a particular series of books.
That's true, and I think that works both at the adult level as well as the children's level. I did want to mention a book signing that I'm going to have a week from Saturday. It's a woman from Central Illinois named Jennifer Powell, and she does a series of children's books called it's the Rachel and Sammy series. Rachel is a raccoon, and Sammy is a skunk. And what Jennifer does is write about ecology in Illinois. So there's books like Rachel and Sammy Learn About the Prairie, Rachel and Sammy Learn About the Forest, Rachel and Sammy Learn About Trees. And her latest that she'll be signing is Rachel and Sammy Learn to Conserve. And I think this is geared more towards like middle school children, but once they start reading the first one, they want to read everyone in the series, so they're learning something about our ecology as well as really enjoying the whole series.
Catching up on what we were talking about a few minutes ago about ebooks, Katrina tweets to us that yes, ebooks can be signed by authors. There are services that allow for ebook signings. The biggest right now is called Authorgraph. Not quite sure how it works, but apparently it is possible. Let's repeat the name again of the author who's coming for your signing, and that's Jennifer Paulson, author of the Rachel and Sammy series.
Yes.
And really, really looking at local wildlife, native wildlife in Illinois. And mm-hmm. and have you seen a following for her in your children's department? Or is she still getting known?
She's getting known, but when we have signings here, the people that have started to read her books come back for more. So it's working out well.
Okay. We still have a few minutes left, time enough for you to get a suggestion in on a favorite book or give a question for our guests, Mary Beth Nabel of I Know You Like a Book in Peoria Heights and Kelly Strom at the Champaign Public Library. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Or you can reach me at Twitter and Facebook at Focus580. And, Kelly, I wanted to go back to you with the book list. Actually, I just have a question coming in wondering, you were already recommending, Kelly, a book for Halloween. Do either you or you, Mary Beth, have a recommendation for a book for Halloween for kids? Have I stumped my guests?
I suppose it depends on the age of the child and what sorts of things they're interested in. My kids always liked, I can't think of the author's first name, maybe Mary Beth knows it. I think Ibbotson is the last name, and she wrote books like Which Witch is Which, and are you familiar with that one?
No, I'm not. I have one son, and I know that his favorite when he was younger was the Goosebumps series.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Still popular. Those mm-hmm. Goosebumps books are still popular.
Which Witch is Which, quick look here, is by Pat Hutchins, about identical twins who are invited to a Halloween party. They decide to dress as witches. Readers will have fun deciding which witch is which as the story continues. So that's one suggestion for Halloween right there. You had what is a nonfiction book, but is totally different, Kelly, from the nonfiction books on football we were talking about earlier. Why don't you tell me about the gardening in miniature?
Well, I just kind of wanted to bring in a spectrum of all the things that we have available at the library. And this particular one I had checked out because I am a gardener. And I thought with the end of the season now, maybe we like to look at some of the books and pictures for either next year or things that maybe we could do indoors. And this one is called Gardening in Miniature by Janet, and it's Janet with an I, J-A-N-I-T, Calvo. And it goes over the phenomenon that's happening now with the fairy gardens and other things like that, where people are using a space that's maybe 12 by 12 or so, and then they're buying miniature plants, and they're creating like little worlds. They're getting little props, like little chairs that they're putting by the plants. And because they're so tiny, they appear to be, say, like big trees if you put a little chair next to them. And they're creating these awesome little worlds. And there's examples in here of different things that people have done and ideas for different plants that you can buy that would meet your qualifications. But they're making like little lakes. I see boathouses and forest paths, and all in this little tiny space. And some of these, like I said, are available to do indoors as indoor houseplant type of situation. And some of them are just maybe ideas for us to do next year.
That's Gardening in Miniature. Who is the author of that book?
Janet Calvo.
Okay. I know with anytime I see a DIY book that gets my curiosity, I'll look at it thinking, well, maybe I've never done anything from a DIY book, but but the dream is still there. Is that a category for you, Mary Beth, at your store that people come in looking for things on?
Yes, I would say so. We have a smattering of everything. So, you know, sure, DIY books are popular. Most of ours, I believe, are used books, but that makes them, you know, more favorable to some people.
And that's something I was wondering, because you do have a mix of new and used. I don't know if this is an approach that other stores are going towards now, but do people tend to buy certain books new and certain books used?
Yes, I believe they do. And it all depends upon their interest in either a collection, like some people want used books, but they want them all hardcover by a certain author. Some of them, if they love the author but aren't intent on keeping the books forever, they'll buy the, you know, used paperbacks. So it varies.
Okay, it's just everybody has their own strategy, I guess, as to which they'll go for.
Exactly.
Okay.
I once had a woman come in, and all she wanted was brown books because she was redoing her family room.
I have heard of things like that, but I've never actually heard it directly, that this is the books as decor.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you can provide that service.
Sure.
We're running out of time here, but I do want to give one last mention of both of your places for people who are looking for books. Of course, the public library in your community, wherever you live, is a fine place to go, and that's the Champaign Public Library in Champaign. You also have a Facebook page as well as your own website.
Yes.
Kelly Strom, thank you very much for being on the program with me today to talk about fall books. And Mary Beth Nabel, Best of luck in times like these with your store. I know you like a book, and that's, I guess, on Prospect in downtown Peoria Heights.
That's true.
And to find you online, where's the best way? Where's the best place to go?
If you go to Facebook, we're at You Like a Book.
Okay, and so that's really the best way to get connected, to get connected to you there.
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, thanks to the both of you for being on the program today. And again, if you have suggestions and comments about books that you'd like to recommend or suggest, go ahead to our website at will.illinois.edu/focus and add it to the comments section for today's program. Today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft is our technical director. Sari Lesk is our intern, helping with production and research. Tomorrow on Focus, raising kids is a challenge on its own, but what would you do if your child told you she wasn't comfortable in her body and wanted to be a boy? That's exactly the situation faced by two Champaign-Urbana parents. They'll talk about how they handle that situation, and that's coming up on Friday's show. Remember, Focus is live each weekday morning at 10, a replay at 8 p.m. You can hear us over the air on AM 580, online at will.illinois.edu, where you can also listen to past programs. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WILL.